So today's talk was inspired by the heat. Some of you undoubtedly had to go out in the heat or have homes that have no air conditioning and experience the heat. And we have an expression in English, being out in the elements. And so being out in the elements, being, I think it means in English, you're out, usually outdoors, in a situation where the raw elemental aspect of reality is quite clearly kind of impinges on us or makes itself present for us. So it usually implies kind of being out in strong wind or strong sun or strong rain, or strong all of those at the same time, or situations where, you know, there can be landslides or some kind of, you know, the elemental aspects of life are not something that's kept at a polite pastoral distance. But the rawness of life and the immediacy of it is quite present. And certainly sometimes when you're out in the elements, it's also, in certain situations, it can be quite dangerous. And as I found out today, I just got a phone call to my mind today that my father, who's a sailor, was out sailing in the middle of an ocean and was shipwrecked. So he got out in the elements and lost his boat. So I didn't talk to him directly, but I talked to his wife, and she said, "Oh, he just takes these things in stride and just thinks about what's next." So I don't know if he's now thinking about his next boat. He's already lost three now. So, one out in the middle of the Atlantic, one in the middle of the, well, on the eastern side of the Pacific, and now he's done it in the middle of the Pacific. So I guess there's more oceans to lose boats in. But out there in the elements, there's some danger right there also. And then we also have the expression in English of someone being in their element. And I associate that expression with the idea of being someplace where there's some sense of fluency and ease and feeling being at home in a situation. You know, the person, their water is their element. They just seem more at home in the water, more fluent in the water than they are walking on land. Or, you know, the desert's their element. Some kind of environment's their element. And so to be in our element is a very nice expression. May we all be in our element. So in the Buddhist tradition, there's a category of experience that's called the four great elements, the Mahabhuta. And the four great elements are kind of the elemental level of our experience that at times are very important for the mindfulness practice or vipassana practice to really connect to the elemental aspect of our experience. So much so that we can be in the elements as opposed to being in our head, be in our body, and also to be in our element with them, to be able to discover some fluency, some sense of being at home, at ease, in the changing flux movements of the elemental level of our experience. And generally people are not closely in touch with the elemental level of experience, either because, you know, we're closed up behind doors or skyscrapers or places and we're not out there in the elements, so-called elements, but more so because we can be lost in our thoughts. We spend a lot of time in our thinking, conceptualizing, interpreting our experience of life, and living in fantasy and dreams and projections and memories and past. And so one of the antidotes to this kind of being in this imaginary world where people can often dwell is to begin connecting to our physical embodied life. And to do that deeply, rawly, in the immediacy of life is to connect to what in Buddhism is called the four great elements. And it's wonderful for some of us, some people, when the elemental environment around us is quite strong, like heat, it's really hot. Some of you, I'm sure, were miserable. Different people have different tolerance levels for different things. But one of the things that, like the strong heat does, for many people, it puts them in their bodies. You're kind of like, you're right here, you know. And I've been on, I've been on many retreats where the weather was so extreme that in some sense people complained, weren't so happy about it. On the other hand, as a teacher of the retreat, I thought, this is great. Because you can't really spend half the day, three quarters of the day, four fifths of the day, nine tenths of the day, lost in fantasy and thoughts. Because, you know, the heat is just like putting you in your body. You feel it. It's so immediate. And here you are. Or the cold. Here you are, connected. You know, you have to kind of deal with it and be present for it. And I actually very much appreciate how much the heat, when I meditate, puts me in my body. I really feel really the substance, the immediacy, the fullness of my body. I can connect it to my body. It kind of pulls me in and down in this, into the elemental level. And especially if I'm also practicing mindfulness at the same time, where I'm keeping in check a little bit the proliferation of thoughts and reactions and all that, I find it quite lovely, this fullness, the immediacy of it. Even though some of it might be unpleasant, the fullness of it and the embodiedness of it can feel so satisfying. And there's an art in meditation to knowing how to work with cold as well. There can be very strong cold. When I was in Japan, this December, November, December, these cold Siberian winds blowing down from Siberia, yes, into Kyoto and the places where I was, and being a monk in the monasteries and having a shaved head, and then they had this, you'd sit this intensive retreat, intensive day practice, and then they had this very strange, from my point of view, custom of optional late night sitting that was required. The rhetoric was all about it being optional, but in fact it was not. And so what they would do in this one monastery, very strict Rinzai monastery, we all sleep in the zendo, in the meditation hall, all these long tatami rows, and they would kind of do the head count, make sure everyone was there, and then they would slam shut these big rolling doors. It's kind of like a garage doors, these big doors, kaboom, and you're all there in your, futon, But the way you did it was you went to bed with your robes kind of on. So you couldn't see them because you went into this futon. And as soon as you heard that big kabang of the door closed, then the optional requirement was for everybody to jump out of these beds with great enthusiasm, because it was to optionally show that we had great enthusiasm for our Zen training. And and Rinzai training in Japan is really good for 20-year-olds. 20-year-old guys, because it's all about effort, and you run between places. You don't ever walk, you run. It was great. I loved it. Elemental stuff. And remember once, can I digress? Is it okay? See what happens. You try to stay with the elements and you go off into other worlds. So I remember when in this Rinzai monastery, about three times a day you'd have an interview with a teacher. The monks did. They did. I didn't because I was a visiting monk, but the resident monks would have three times a day. And the first time when these interviews were scheduled, I didn't know about it, and it was a period of meditation, and I was sitting there in the zendo, very still, very quiet. Everything was very quiet and still. And suddenly there was a little. I could hear faintly in the distance a little bell. And the next thing I knew, there was an explosion, cacophony, explosion of people, monks, all around me. And the way they have their, you're sitting up on a platform, and you have your slippers on the platform below, below the platform. And And they were all jumping down and trying to get slippers on and running out the door. The slippers were flying in the air. And these guys were kind of running at full trot, running there to get to be in line, to be the first one in line for their interview with their Zen teacher. It's a very different training than those of you who've only been on Vipassana retreats. You have a hard time imagining how different it is. Anyway, this is the way it's done. It's a very different kind of approach to spiritual life. So anyway, these 20-year-old guys was really great, you know. So we had this optional sitting late at night. And they would close the door, and then we'd all jump out of these futons. And, you know, we'd all grab our something. Something to sit on, a futon or something, a little zabaton. And we would rush out to the outside walkway, the full, like, porch, long porch that went around the temple. That was outdoors. And we looked down this beautiful kind of, you know, rock garden, which was nicely raked and all that. And we'd all be lined up there all in a row. And full moon night, it was beautiful. The skies were really clear and nice. And we went like down in this beautiful rock garden. And you couldn't ask for something, you know, visually more pristine and beautiful and, you know, romantically zen. And it's great. Except for the Siberian wind blowing down this amazingly cold weather in December, and these shaved heads. So that's elemental. So then you have to learn to deal with that. How do you sit without cold? And so there's an art to learning how to sit with cold as well as with heat. I found that there's a way of just trying to relax really deeply. Really, it was really important to relax the body as deeply as I could to manage with a cold. But it really put me in my body, put me here. And then it was optional sitting, and then we would sit optionally as long as we wanted. But the optional thing was that you couldn't leave until the person who was more senior than you left first. So once the more senior person left, then it was optional when you went to bed. But you had to wait your turn. And since I was, you know, the youngest, newest person in the monastery, I'd been there for, you know, a couple of days. You know, I was, you know where I was. So we would sit there, and I'd wait and wait and wait. And you had to look good. You'd sit there and look good, sit up, relax, be calm. And then, but after, like, you know, 4/5 of the monks had gone back to bed, and just like 3 or 4 of us, the youngest monks, were left. And we couldn't just go back to bed quickly. We had to kind of, you know, optionally keep the time, you know, respectable amount of time. But there were only 3 or 4 of us left, then suddenly our postures would change, and we'd go like this against the wall. And then in Zen, you had these really long robes, sleeves, the robes. We take these long sleeves and we wrap them up around our heads. You know, and then, to my amazement, what the other monks wanted to talk about was baseball. You know, when all the senior ones had left, it was just us young ones left. And then, you know, baseball. You know, so in the elements. In Japan, pristine, beautiful rock gardens, moonlight, baseball. Like a haiku, right? So I've digressed. So the elements. So Vipassana practice, one way of practicing is to become very familiar with the elemental level of experience. And it's a wonderful antidote to the tendency to proliferate in our thoughts and our imagination of how things are. And so there are these four great elements. And this are, and their order is somewhat important because they go from coarse to more subtle, and there's more, but anyway. So the first is earth element. The earth, like ground, earth. The second is water. The third is fire, and the fifth is air. So earth, water, fire, and air. And this is not meant to be a primitive kind of form of physics, but rather it's the Buddhist way, maybe the ancient Indian way, of in part categorizing our physical sensual experiences. Right? All the world of sensations that we experience them are said to be able to be somehow or subsumed underneath one of these four, each of these four categories. So, for example, the earth element is the quality of hardness or heaviness. It's sometimes said to be also the earth element. So when you feel something hard, like you feel your bones, or if you feel your bone, you know, sometimes you've sit long enough on these very soft, nice kapok fill cushions. After a few hours of sitting on them, it feels like concrete, you know. You know, you feel the hard earth element is there very strongly. Or when you first sit down, it feels very soft. So you feel the you know, that's the earth element, they say. And then the water element is said to be that which binds, the cohesive quality of things. So it's a little bit hard, they say, to experience the water element. Some teachers will say that you can only experience it somewhat, a little bit conceptually rather than directly. But it's a sense of fluidity or cohesiveness. So like the saliva in your mouth, if you kind of move your saliva around, you can feel this cohesive quality. And that's the water element, or the flow of the blood in your body, is kind of the liquids in your body. The moisture in your eyes, if you can feel that. And then there's the fire element, which is heat and cold, temperature. And then there's the last one, is the air element. And the air element is the way they refer to movement. So whenever you feel movement in your body, so if you have gas, for example, the gas is that you feel movement, that's the air element. Or if you move your arm, actually, the movement of your arm, you're experiencing the air element, because any kind of movement is said to be an expression of the air element. So rather than thinking about, you know, how literally how this fits into these categories of earth, water, air, fire, and air, it's more like this is the encouragement to actually drop down to this elemental level of our experience and find yourself, find it, and discover how to be in your element with it. Find out how to be resting in it, how to be at rest in this level of our experience. And that's often the kind of the guideposts for Vipassana meditation, is when whatever experience we're having now, there's no need to deny an experience or push it away. Whatever the experience we have right now, can we find our rest in that? Can we find a place of rest in that experience? So if we drop down into the immediacy, the rawness of our elemental experience, our sensory experience, can you experience it, and then can you also find your rest there? Can you find a sense of place of peace or rest in the middle of that experience? One of the functions of this teaching of the four elements, according to the Buddha, was to help human beings overcome an excessive identification with their body. And one way, this is one of the ways we identify excessively with our body, is to take our body as, this is mine, this is my body. And the four elements are also meant to be kind of an analysis. We begin understanding how this, what makes up your body. It doesn't really make sense to say, this is mine, is what makes it up. So, for example, sometimes there's five, sometimes six elements. So when you add elements, the next one you add is space, the element of space. And, you know, as most of us know, if you took and compressed the human body to the absolute limit of how far it can be compressed, take all the space out of the human body, a pinhead would be too big. Big, you know, would be like, you know, it would, you know, it would be, you know, there's so much space in us. That's mostly what we are, just, you know, lots and lots of space. So I guess they say, like, the Big Bang, sometimes, if, you know, the Big Bang. So when it was all, you know, all began, or was close back to that, like, nanosecond, how big was the whole universe? The first nanosecond or two, you know. I don't know if they have measurements, but if you go back. They give us some impressive size of the universe. 10 to the minus 34 centimeters. 10 to the minus 34 centimeters. But it might be off but a couple of degrees there. But so if you take the tip of one of my pieces, my hair, how many of those little would fit on that tip of that? How many universes would fit on top of that tip of hair? So that's like a quadrillion. Quadrillion universes on top of a quadrillion universes on top of a tip of hair. If we compressed all the universes, right? So isn't that phenomenal? I think it's phenomenal. So, you know, that's mostly because it's all space, right? So you need to think. You know, but it's, you know, a lot of space in there. So who are we if mostly this is space? So then you have so that's a, you know, the space element, the fifth one, and then there's the earth element. I'm fond of saying that this body of ours is made up of recycled material. You know, like that's, you know, recycling is like old. You know, it's like a new thing they discovered. It's been going on for several millions or billions of years. So, you know, we take all that, we eat our food, and we digest the stuff and it goes into our body and it makes our bones and our flesh and our hair and all this stuff. And it lasts for a little while and then it kind of breaks down and gets pooped out, and then it becomes, that gets transformed into some other thing that eats that. And, you know, the carbon and potassium and all these things end up, you know, in some other being. And so like the carbon atoms that you have in your hand, if you look at your hand, look at, you know, the, you know, how many different living beings has that, the carbon atoms in your hand, seen, been through? It's probably been, you know, you're something you're sharing. And once you die, or once you kind of, you shed your skin, not just dogs that shed, right? We shed all the time. Then those carbon atoms are going to be recycled and be used again by some other beings probably, and off it goes. And, you know, so all this stuff that goes through us is just endlessly recycled material. It's here for a little while. We get to borrow it and be the custodian of it for a little while, and then it moves on. And then the water element, you know, the water element and the air element, you know, all the stuff, you know, it's cycling through. You know, when I was very small, my father, when I was like five or six, my father talking to me about how we were out in the woods, you know, father and son peeing together, and on some hike, and saying something, you know, when you excuse me for this way, but this is what he said, you know, it's made an impression on me. It's, you're, as you're peeing here on the plants, on the ground, on the debris there, you know, you're probably peeing on you know, carbon atoms that were in Julius Caesar. You know, you could mention other historical people, but then I'd probably be sacrilegious. But, you know, so when you're breathing air, the chances are that each breath of air you're breathing now probably contains the oxygen that maybe went through the lungs of the Buddha. You know, because the way that there's so many of these molecules, and they get spread out and diffused, and they go out in all directions, and chances are that there's, you know, of the billions of molecules that the Buddha breathed in one day, you know, they've been dispersed, and some of them made it to us here. And isn't that nice? You know, we get to share it with the Buddha. So all the stuff, you know, of our life, the physical stuff of our life, is it us? Is it ours? Is it, you know, is who we really are? And the Buddha was suggesting that it's not so useful to take this physical body as being me, as being mine, but rather see it as something borrowed, something recycled, something that's passing through. And in doing that, to ease up, to lighten up a little bit on this way in which we sometimes oppress ourselves by saying, this is me, myself, and mine. And the fire element also. I'm kind of fond of the idea that fire, heat, you know, makes life possible. And so much of it, of the heat that makes life possible, has its source in the sun. And, you know, the energy that, you know, makes me move my arm and to speak, has its origins in, most of it, I think, has the origins in the energy of the sun that somehow comes along, and there's little wonderful plants that photosynthesize, and we eat them, and off it goes. And you know, so there's the elements of life to kind of reflect a little bit that how much of our life is really belongs to this elemental level. We're never far from it. It's very interesting. It's also interesting that when you meditate, that you begin realizing, understanding that the elemental level of experience, the immediacy of physical experience, is something that is changeable. It's changing all the time. But it's also changes in dependence on your state of mind. So when you sit down to meditate and you've had a busy, stressful day, one of the things you're probably more likely to encounter is the earth element. You might, or maybe the water element. You'll feel perhaps really hard and heavy, and you might feel a lot of tension. Tension, I think, is the tension can be either the earth element, the hardness, the compactness, the weight, the heaviness, or tension can also be the cohesive element, the whole, the binding element that pulls in and tightens up. And so you can feel the heaviness and tightness sometimes when you've after a stressful day. And then as you meditate, the water element might give way to a sense of movement, to the air element, a sense of expansion, lightness. Perhaps the temperature in your body changes. Some people, when they meditate and they relax, their body gets warmer. Sometimes the body can get actually quite warm when they get concentrated. Sometimes the body gets cooler when you meditate, especially if you've kind of been overheated during the day, kind of with your mind kind of going at 200 miles an hour. And so you can feel as you meditate, you can sense and feel how the elements have been shifting and changing as you sit and unwind and relax and calm. And it's very interesting to watch that change, or the changing flow of the sensations. And generally, the movement of the elements in the elements change as you meditate. And generally, they move as the concentration deepens. They move from the heavier ones, from the earth element ones, towards the lighter ones, to eventually mostly the air. And so with time, the earth element kind of gets lighter and lighter. And sometimes the earth element, sense of a body and substance and weight, can disappear entirely. And same thing with the sense of cohesiveness or water. And sometimes it's just sense of air, very light, very expansive, very spacious, since it's left. There can be a play of these different elements as you meditate and move one after the other. It's said that all four elements always appear together. But even though they appear together, they appear in different percentages. So, if, you know, these last few days when it's been so hot, it's mostly, you know, been this heat element we feel. But if you put your hand in warm water, then you can maybe sometimes feel that the water has, you know, it has cohesiveness, it has liquid, it has some sense of. They say that water also has some hardness. You know, if you fall from an airplane, you'll encounter that hardness of the water. Water has hardness in it also. It has temperature and it has movement, the waves are moving. So all these things can be present at the same time. So as you meditate, not only can your sense of your body change as you relax and unwind and get more expansive and lighter in meditation, but also what the mind focuses on can change. So it's possible to be selective in our attention. So sometimes in meditation practice, especially when people are quite settled and calm, people will select out of their experience different sensations. Not because it's predominant in itself, but rather because the mind has chosen to pull this out. Some meditators will actually play with this. And I know some people who like to, when it's really hot and they find it uncomfortable, will go through their body and look for coldness. Look for it in some place in the body where there's cool, some sense of coolness. And then they'll focus their attention very carefully into that coolness so that the mind is being conditioned or influenced or shaped by the coolness it's focusing on rather than the heat all around. Does that make sense what I'm talking about? So, you know, our mind, you know, mostly what causes us difficulty is our mind, right? The heat is not the problem. It's usually the mind. Or, you know, and so the mind reacts and So one way some people I know kind of cope with extreme elements is they actually choose to focus on the opposite. So they focus on coolness. Or when it's really cold, they focus on some place in the body where it's warm. And then they bring their attention there. And it makes it easier for the mind. Some people, sometimes in some meditators, will take these, and sometimes the mind chooses for you. So rather than you choosing, you know, I'm going to focus on a particular element here, for some, whatever reason, maybe we don't know, sometimes the mind will select out of the environment a particular element to focus on for a while. So it might focus for a while on the earth element, and that becomes really strong, a sense of hardness and solidity. Or it might focus for a while on the water element, and a sense of fluidity becomes really strong, or air element, and movement feels really strong. Sometimes very strong presence of one element or the other, in this kind of way and meditatively, is sometimes associated with a purification process. That as the body, as this, the tensions and the holding patterns and our mind and body begin to unravel and move, that there's a purification process, and that process sometimes entails the tension concentrates on one element or the other for a period of time. So, for example, if a person carries a lot of tension in their body and feels that hardness or the tightness of that, there might be a time when the mind just takes up that as a subject of attention as you're working through the tension. It can seem like everything's just tense for a while. And that's because you're working through that, and this purification process is kind of resolving or dissolving the tension until that's finished. So, traditionally in Vipassana practice, the four elements meditation is very important. It can be interpreted very simply as learning to meditate at the level of the raw sensations of your experience. So not staying at the level of your interpretations and concepts, but learning to drop down into the raw, immediate sensory experience of what's happening. And then learning how to be at home in that, how to find your element in there. How to rest there, find a place of rest in that level of experience. As we do that, it has a number of different functions. One is to help us free ourselves from the attachment to the body and to self, this is my body. It also can help us with the purification process that can go on. And also it can show us some of the deeper places of rest or peace that can come with meditation come when when the body, the sensory world, is most in flux and most moving, most the sense of impermanence in the body and our physical experience is most dramatic. There's a wonderful paradox, not wonderful, there's a paradox, a reversal. When the mind is most agitated, most busy and impermanent, you know, moving a lot, the body can seem very solid and fixed. When the mind is most still, the body seems most impermanent. Do you get that reversal? There's something about the agitated mind that kind of locks in things and holds things tight and interprets things in fixed ways. And when the mind is very soft and relaxed and very still, then it allows, so the mind is very still, it allows the physical body to unravel and move and flux and flow and pulse and undulate and do all the different things the body can do. And so there's a wonderful reciprocal relationship. So as we drop down into the body and start feeling this elemental, physical, impermanent flow in the body moving, it helps the mind. That process of doing that will also help the mind become stiller and stiller, more and more peaceful. It's a wonderful thing. So, and then aside from its value in helping still the mind, dropping down into the sensory, physical, elemental level, is it's just fun. It can be really fun to sit here and allow this, you know, the change and the flux, and to watch the change and see it all move. And I find it sometimes much more entertaining than some of the things you can see on television. And it's much more healthy for you too. So the four elements. So that was my attempt to introduce to you a traditional concept that's relates to our meditation practice. So hopefully, you know, it has some value as we continue with your practice. So earth, water, fire, and air.
Space.
And then if you have, the usual thing is to list four. But then sometimes there's a list of five, and sometimes there's a list of six. And then there's those people who argue whether there's really four, or there's five, or there's six. Which one's right?
I mean, what is six?
Six is consciousness. So six elements. So may you be in your element. Thank you.